according to John. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. This is the testimony given by John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" He confessed and did not deny it, but confessed, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" He answered, "No." Then they said to him, "Who are you? Let us have an answer for those who sent us. What do you say about yourself?" He said, "I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, 'Make straight the way of the Lord,' as the prophet Isaiah had said." Now they had been sent from the Pharisees. They asked him, "Why then are you baptizing if you are neither the Messiah or Elijah, nor the prophet?" John answered, "I baptize with water. Among you stands one whom you do not know, the one who is coming after me. I am not worthy to untie the sandal of his sandals." This took place in Bethany across the Jordan, where John was baptizing. The Gospel of our Lord.
Just some quick background before we get into the heart of the Gospel. These other two lessons from that passage from Isaiah, and the lovely, wonderful, and a little bit intimidating Song of Mary, if you were really paying attention to the words there, begin to unearth what I refer to as the lie of empire, which starting in the 4th century, the church bought into lock, stock, and barrel and began to imagine its mission as a church in the world and as a Christian community in the world as finding power, consolidating power, maintaining power, and using power in a coercive sort of way, which you can't get more antithetical to the gospel than that. And yet, that's how the church has been operating for, lo, these many centuries. And it all revolves around piety and war and victory. You know, we're going to go get them. And the whole concept of peace from the vantage point of empire revolves around, again, coercive power, military victory, and political conformity, which we've had some experience with. When you pay attention to the language of Isaiah and Mary's song from the Gospel according to Luke, which draws upon both the prophecies of Isaiah and the song of Hannah in the Hebrew Scriptures, Hannah being the mother of Samuel, who was the prophet who anointed the first sort of legitimate king of Israel, David, you'll notice from that language that God's peace is just a little bit different from the peace of imperial power. God's peace relies on participation, partnership, and this is the one I have a little trouble with myself, letting go of selfish, self-centered ends. I always have to pause when I consider that one. It's like, what do you mean I have to let go of self-centered ends? I want what I want. I want it now. Get out of my way so I can get it. And yet, there it is. There's the core of the peace of God, which brings us to the figure introduced to us in the prologue of the Gospel according to John, which is John, who is never identified in John's Gospel as the Baptist. That's other stories, not this one. John is introduced to us through interrogation. these religious leaders, and you know how religious leaders are, don't you? Again, go back to the whole, the piece of empire, coercive power and all that good stuff. The religious leaders show up and say, "Who are you anyway? Who are you?" And so he's being interrogated, and he says, "Well, no, I'm not Elijah. Nope, I'm not the Messiah. No, no, no. Nope, I'm not a prophet." And then he does this interesting little thing. He identifies himself by using a line from the scriptures. Do you notice that? He says to the religious, "Well, I'm just a guy crying out in the wilderness. I'm just here to witness to the one that you really need to be paying attention to here." And I was thinking about that over the course of the week, going, how many times have I identified myself over against other people? Example, the other evening we were at a function, and it was a mix of children and adults, and it got to the point where it was hard to tell which was which after a while, because some of the adults were acting in what I thought was a rather selfish and self-centered way in interacting with these kids. And the whole evening I sat there going, "Oh, look at these adults, acting in a selfish and self-centered way. Boy, I'm sure glad I'm not like them." And then by the end of the evening, we're leaving that function, and it hit me. It's like, oh, my God, I am precisely like these people that I had observed. I never like those moments, I just have to say up front. But you know what I'm talking about, right? Oh, we're not like them. Ha-ha! And so John, in this story, gives us an example and maybe a little bit of encouragement how we can begin to identify ourselves. Has anyone here ever thought of defining yourself or identifying yourself with a line from the scriptures? Anybody besides me? Nobody? Okay, here's a challenge for the week. And I'm not, please don't get me wrong about this. This is not some highfalutin thing. When I was in seminary years and years ago, and I have to say, in all honesty, I wasn't in the best of shape back in those days, but one of the lines of scripture that just kept coming at me for some reason, it just kept coming at me, and it wouldn't let me alone, and it hasn't left me alone to this day, and it's the first line of Psalm 62, "For God alone my soul in silence waits, from God comes my life." And it's just dogged me all these years. Not because I found it, not because it was some big romantic moment for me. It's just been in my face all this time. And so I'm beginning to suspect that it may have something to do with the way God would have me live. It's just a suspicion. So I want to encourage you folks, to take up John's example this morning and imagine, as you continue to go through life, sitting here on Sundays, or maybe you're reading the Bible, come across a verse that maybe tells you something really important about who you are. Like, here's an example: "Blessed are the peacemakers." Or, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness." Or, I didn't get too much pushback at the 8 o'clock, so I'll share this one. Do you folks know who the longest person in the Bible is, who I also identify with? The longest person in the Bible, it's Balaam. He tied his ass to a tree and walked a mile. It's in there, I'm telling you. You can find it. I think that's the counterpart to the opening line of Psalm 62 for me, right? They sort of balance each other out somehow. Anyway, just think about that. Imagine doing like John. John says, I'm just a voice crying in the wilderness, you know, prepare the way of the Lord. So, and as a way of not engaging that very comfortable way of identity, well, I'm not like them, well, I'm not like Ken. Oh, no, I'm nothing like him. One of the great beauties of recovery programs, how many of you folks have ever sat in on a meeting of AA or NA or Al-Anon or Gamblers Anonymous? Okay, so there's been a little bit of exposure. Have you noticed what people do when they open those meetings? The first thing they do is tell who they really are. Oh, I'm an alcoholic, or I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, or I'm a gambler, or, you know, I'm a food addict, or whatever. And it's shared in a way where everyone knows that they are no longer victims, but volunteers, right? And so we look for proactive ways to identify ourselves rather than over against everybody else. And today, this very day, we have a golden opportunity for you folks to engage that very exercise by considering the possibility of working with the homeless here in Carson City under the able leadership of Deacon Craig Laguerre. And the work is basically this, to be with the homeless and go, I'm just like them. These people, they're me, they're us, they're ours. Craig?
Father Jeff is absolutely right. I've been ministering to the homeless now. I've been ordained 26 years at the old St. Teresa's Church up here, over there, wherever I'm at. And I've been ministering to the homeless probably 28 years. The homeless are people. They're human beings, just like you and me. They each have their own stories and how they end up on the street. One of the things I didn't mention at the earlier service, we had a gentleman, I had to do my CPE in Reno, Clinical Pastoral Education, okay? So I was on the street over there on 4th Street. I would go out at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. And we picked up, I was told to get to know the one homeless person that everybody else was afraid of. Gee, thank you. You know? So what I did is I started asking around. I said, who are you afraid of? Oh, it's the guy by the name of Shoes. You'll know him. He wears one black tennis shoe, one red tennis shoe, and he shadow boxes. Oh, okay. And I found him. So I spent several hours every week with him in the early mornings behind Harrah's Casino in the alleyway. I finally gave up because I talked to him. He never said a word to me in 2 weeks. Not one word. Not hello, goodbye, leave me alone, nothing. But I'd sit next to him and just try to talk with him. I gave up, and I told him one day, that's it. I wiped my hands of this. I can't do this anymore. So I got up and I started walking back to Catholic Charities, which was on 4th Street at that time. And they had a small store down below, like Fish has. And then up above that was their office space. And Sue Laxalt was the director at the time. So Sue, as I was walking back, I looked back and Shoes was behind me about a half a block. He was following me. I told him, I said, I'm done. I'm not going to see you anymore. He showed up. I opened the door. He came in. It's about 6 o'clock in the morning. And I yelled up at Sue. I said, you there? She said, yes. I said, someone here that you may be able to help. And I introduced him to Sue. That was the last I saw him. I found out later that he was on the street. The reason he was on the street is he was bipolar, manic depressive, and his wife and two children were killed in an automobile accident. He was a professor of economics at Michigan State University. He got off his medication, got to drinking, and hit the streets. After a considerable length of time, she got him to Veterans Administration. He was a veteran. He went through the programs, ended up working at Catholic Charities for a while, and then went to work for the University of Nevada. He came off the street. We each have our own stories and ways that things happen. You know, we have currently one of the greatest opportunities, I think, to let us know that we are all one faith. You know, it's one of the things that I pray for is that someday we can all sit down together and pray and have communion together, etc. Someday we're going to get it right, and I'll be sitting on a cloud probably looking down going, yep, got it right. One denomination on earth. But the reality of the situation is we have four parishes in this community now, St. Teresa's, St. Peter's, St. Paul's, and First United Methodist Church. And we are every month, basically, housing the homeless, 7 days a week, all the way includes Christmas. We've been there at Thanksgiving. They come in at 9 o'clock at night. Salvation Army has loaned us their bus. We pick them up at Fish parking lot, and we leave the parking lot at 9. We come to the location, and we're here usually 5 minutes after. And they're there until 6:30 in the morning. We have three different shifts with two people on each shift, one man, one woman, or two men. I'm a male chauvinist. I do not want two ladies being responsible for midnight to 4 a.m. So we will have two people on each shift. The shift starts 8:30 to midnight, midnight to 4, 4 to 7. They'd have to leave the premises at 6:30 in the morning. A lot of people say, 6:30, that's the coldest part of the day. But that's like you and I getting up and going to work at 6:30, 7 o'clock. They're used to that. They've had a warm place to sleep. I also need to share with you, I have, outside of them being those that are on the street that have a mental illness, I have no sympathy for them. I have compassion. The mentally ill, I have sympathy for. They don't really know what's going on sometimes. But those who are on the street that are into drugs and alcohol have made a choice. And I have compassion. I'm not going to let them freeze to death. I'm not going to let them starve to death. If they want services, they want to give up that lifestyle or change, we have resources to get them too. But they have to ask, because you can't take that horse and make him drink the water. Okay? That's all there is to it. Luckily, last year, we tried it for 30 days last year at St. Teresa's. It worked out fantastic. In 30 days, we had three guys come off the street. One of them went to work for an engineering outfit in Gardnerville. He was an electrical engineer. Another one worked to work for the county, city, county, municipality here in Carson City is weed abatement. And I don't remember where the third went. And all three of them are still working, and they're off the street, and they're taking care of themselves. So far this year, we have one that's come off the street for sure. I just got notified a couple days ago, thanks, Deacon, for allowing us to be here. He says, I've been able to save enough money for first and last down payment for rent while I've been here. So he's off the street. Why are we getting so many people on the street? We have approximately 150 is our estimate right now here in Carson City. They're living full-time on the street, adults. The last thing we got from Peggy Sweetland, McKinney-Vento Act, which is the school system's count of the children who are homeless, is 462. That's amazing. 462 kids that have no home to go to. Now, they're couch surfing. They're bouncing from one friend's house to another. That's the most common thing. Or they're sleeping in their cars. If you want a real experience, go to Mexican Dam. You all know where that is? Okay, go out there about 2 o'clock in the morning. Don't get out of the car, I'm telling you now, because there is some drug dealing going on out there. But out in that area, you'll find cars parked, and you'll see young kids out there. I don't see them during the daytime here on the street. I spend about 4 days a week passing out gloves, socks, hats, jackets, and this sort of thing. Won't let them starve to death or freeze to death. But we have the opportunity here for each location of those four that we've talked about, First United Methodist, St. Peter's, St. Paul's Lutheran, and St. Teresa's, to house the homeless. It's simple, easy work. The hardest part about it is staying awake. You know, it's kind of tough between 12 a.m. and 4 a.m. because you're going to read a book, and what do you do when you read a book at home at that time, huh? All right? So that's the tough part. The homeless we have, and I started to say it again, I was going to say, have no problems at all. Dear God, don't hit me with lightning. We have had a couple problems, yes. But the problems we've had are very, very minor. And the experience that I've had where we've had some major problems was actually down in the Tenderloin, okay? We had this year two I've had arrested. We had a family come in, and I do not apologize to that family at all. Man and a woman who were not married, and she had two kids. One of them happened to be 7 years old. The other one was in eighth grade. What I try to do at this time is, okay, we've got these kids. My first concern is those kids, because the adults have made a decision, but why drag the kids through it? So we sit back, and I'm thinking, how am I going to get to these kids? Well, it didn't take long. The man beat up the eighth grader pretty bad. He is now in jail and is $25,000 bail. He's not getting out for a while. But what gives me an opportunity, or gives us an opportunity, I'm also a chaplain with the Sheriff's Department, so I've got a kind of different head gleaning into this. Gave it a couple of days. I asked her, I said, April, what about the kids? You guys hungry? Breakfast time? Let's go. So we took off, went down to McDonald's. And when we took off to go down there, the first thing I did was call CPS, Child Protective Services. We'd already talked. They came, met me down at McDonald's, and they took the kids right then and there. April was not real happy with me. But you still come into the shelter. The kids are now in foster care. She'd been to court once. Was supposed to go a second time. She missed the court date, so that pretty much does her in. And I'm tickled pink. She can be as happy and angry with me as she wants to be. Those kids are off the street. That's what it boils down to. So there are opportunities to help beyond just giving them a warm, easy place to sleep. There's no work involved here. We have cots, we have tarps, and we have blankets. The tarps go on the floor so you don't mess up the floor. Then they put the cot on top of the tarps. Then they have the blankets. Most of them have their own sleeping bags. And they go to bed. If they come in, they're in for the evening. They can go out. We spent two nights here, by the way, a week ago or so. Yeah. Had some things going on at St. Teresa's. So it was kind of a learning experience how we were going to do it here. And you can go out on the porch and you can have a smoke. Cigarettes go in the butt. But if you leave that smoking area, you better have your personal belongings with you because you're not coming back in. I mean, just the other night we had someone leave for a while, went and sat in their car. They were sleeping in their car. And went and came out of the shelter, went back to their car for 30 minutes. Well, when she came back in, handed her stuff, says, you're done. See you tomorrow night. You're not coming back in tonight. There's only one reason she's out there. It's either drug or alcohol. Okay? So we're very, with our rules and regulations, very strict on that. They can come in drunk. They can come in high, as long as they're not disruptive and they're going to lay down and go to sleep. One of the guys, the sheriff's department brought him by one night, about 1 o'clock in the morning. I just happened to be there that night. And he came, and he was looped. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we actually helped him from the car into the shelter because he couldn't walk. sat him down on a cot and said, "How are you doing? Are you going to behave yourself and go to sleep?" He said, "No, I'm not." I said, "What are you going to do?" He said, "I'm going to pass out." And he fell over. he fell over, and he didn't wake up again until I kicked the bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. So, yeah. The other thing we do, and I made a fatal mistake last year, used to have them come in and sign up their name and date of birth. With that information, I've got all I need to check them out if there's a problem. I can go back to the sheriff's department and find out if there's any wants or warrants for them or whatever. But that was a mistake. So what we do now is they come in, we ask them, "What is your name? What is your date of birth?" It does two things. Gets us to know who they are, and it gives them the ability to recognize that we care. Because now we're talking to them, we learn who they are, we're looking them in the eyes. Because the biggest thing you'll hear from homeless people is that they feel like nobody ever sees or recognizes them. Why? Do you want to be walking down the street and the guy's standing there begging for some money, flying their kite? The sign that they got, you know, out of work, veteran, needs help, they call that flying their kite, okay? So what do? You don't want to give them anything? You don't look at them. You ignore them. So they feel like they're the ignored society. We get to talking to them. We get to know who they are. I mean, there's Kelly, there's Claude, there's Sean, there's, you know, April, Melinda. And that's what's surprising me this year is the amount of women we've got there. We had 23 in the shelter last night. 9 of them were women. 9. The average age of these women is 61 years of age. Think about that. I'm 71 and I'm thinking, I couldn't be doing this for 10 years. I'd have been dead a long time ago. But the problem we're having, Belinda's telling me that she was paying, her SSI was something like $1,175, right in there, she was getting. Now, the rent that she was at, the place that she was staying, just went up $400 a month. She was paying $725. She didn't have any money to pay the rent, pay the utilities, buy some food. Where is she going? On the street. So this is the problems that we're having. This is some of the reasons we're there. You know? Have compassion. Then we've got those that are, we do have the mentally ill, mentally disabled. You know, and that's a whole different ballgame. We're not there to fix any problems. We're there to be there for them when they are ready to fix their own problem. We don't take ownership of those problems. So what I'm asking you is we need men more than anything else right now, gentlemen. All right? What is it, 80% of the work around is done by 90% of the women in the parish? Isn't that something like, yeah?
I don't know anything about
We have confession tomorrow. Okay. So that's kind of what we're looking at. If you have any questions, I'll be with you in the back here having a cup of coffee. I'll be more than happy to answer those questions. All I need is your name, phone number, and email address. Okay. And then Daphne De Leon is probably the guru of the scheduling, and she keeps me out of trouble. That's all there is to it. You know, we have currently over 100 volunteers helping out. We come to St. Peter's, we will also be coming over to help here. It's not that you're going to be St. Peter's handling only St. Peter's with your volunteers. You'll be going, hopefully you'll come with us. We've already got, I think, 15 or so that have been over to our church. With that, I thank you. I'll be available after services here, too.
We wouldn't have this opportunity without Craig Laguerre. So, Craig, thanks so much. So, talk to him. We've got some other folks who have volunteered. Again, this is an opportunity. It's a wonderful
opportunity. Craig mentioned the two nights that we hosted, and I hung out for those. And the couple of guys that I recognized that didn't quite realize how well I knew them, because they were pretty much in the bag, it's a wonderful opportunity to identify like John does in the gospel today, to connect. So take a nice deep breath.